This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
All right, everybody, guys and girls. Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review. Right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter. And on Instagram at MichaelRitter5, also the host of the Football Function Podcast, available on all your podcast platforms. If you are a football fan, if you enjoy this time of year and you're into that kind of stuff, definitely go check us out over at the Football Function. I promise you will not regret it. But that is not why we're here. We're here to talk about SmackDown, specifically the SmackDown that aired on September 3rd, 2021 from Jacksonville, Florida. Now, this wasn't really that great of an episode of SmackDown, just being honest. It wasn't absolutely terrible, but it just felt kind of like it felt like it was missing something. I don't really know what it was. It wasn't to the degree of like some of the Monday Night Raws that we've seen in the past, but just judging it like based on the SmackDown scale, it wasn't necessarily that great of an episode. Now, next week might be a little bit different because obviously, like we all know, they're going to be in New York City at Madison Square Garden. First time they've been to Madison Square Garden in a while, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know exactly the number, so I'm not going to try to guess. But it's been a while, for sure, because that's just something that you remember. Whenever they go to MSG, you know that it's a big event. So it's pretty cool that it's going to be a SmackDown and not like a pay-per-view or something like that. Because, I mean, think about it. WrestleMania has been at Madison Square Garden. So the fact that a SmackDown is going to be at the same venue that we've seen host a WrestleMania, it just tells you that they're trying to make this a big episode of SmackDown, and so big that they're even going to call it, quote-unquote, Super SmackDown. Now, I have a problem with this, honestly. We talked about this in the past, how WWE is guilty of doing this type of thing to an event, like whether it's the SmackDown before a two-night WrestleMania event, they feel like they have to get a little bit more WrestleMania juice squeezed out, so they decide to title it WrestleMania SmackDown. It didn't feel anything different than a regular SmackDown. I covered it. I thought that it was just, you know, your regular SmackDown, other than maybe a little bit of decorating that they had around the stage, or maybe just the Jumbotron itself had WrestleMania SmackDown on top of the regular SmackDown logo. But I don't know. I mean, it's just so played out doing this thing. I feel like they've tried it. It hasn't worked. They've gotten roasted for it. It doesn't make the event feel any bigger. I mean, just let the event speak for itself. Like, you don't have to bang your chest and say, hey, this is going to be a badass event. Like, no, let the event, let the product speak for itself. We already know we're going to get Edge versus Seth Rollins next week. We find out that we're going to get Brock Lesnar showing up. I mean, that's going to feel like a bigger event in of itself. We don't need you adding a little title, a little WWE flavor to it, making it Super SmackDown, because it's not. It's not a Super SmackDown. It's a regular SmackDown. It's just going to be at a badass event in a city where is arguably the most passionate wrestling fans in the world, New York City. I have no doubt that they're going to fill up Madison Square Garden and probably blow the roof off of it if, you know, a moment asks for it. I don't think they're going to do it just for the sake of being loud, which they might, but I would expect them to basically be honest with themselves and, you know, cheer for the things they want to cheer for, boo what they want to boo. And that's kind of the vibe that I get from a New York City crowd, just from watching them on TV. Obviously, I've never been a part of a New York City crowd. I've never been to the New York State, so I don't know really what that environment is in terms of experiencing it, if I can get that word out. Just from watching it on TV, I mean, it's pretty clear that that New York City fans are pretty passionate. So hopefully they will give WWE and the people at SmackDown the cheers that they want and the boos that they want, because this is a good crowd and a good place to have a show. But nonetheless, I still am not a fan of the whole Super SmackDown thing. I don't want to repeat myself, but it's just like the whole WrestleMania Backlash thing. Like, not necessarily to the same extent, because whenever they titled the Backlash pay-per-view WrestleMania Backlash, it was obvious that they were just trying to continue to squeeze that WrestleMania, or try to squeeze as much marketing juice out of the WrestleMania tagline. So this is just trying to draw ratings. They're trying to hype it up throughout the week, let you guys know, hey, it's going to be a Super SmackDown next week. You don't want to miss it. You better tune in. Otherwise, you're going to regret it. Now, I'm going to tune in, obviously. I would tune in even if it wasn't titled a Super SmackDown. If it was just a regular episode of SmackDown, I would still be tuning in. But I don't know. I guess they're just trying to do what they can to try to bring in more viewers and to try to make people more interested in the product. Well, spoiler alert, provide a good product and people are going to be interested in it. It doesn't really matter what you try to throw on top of these things to try to make it seem more than what it is. So I don't know. I'm not going to continue there, but you guys should know by now, I am not a fan of this type of thing. Just leave it as SmackDown. We don't need all that extra stuff. But anyway, that's next week. I will look forward to covering that whenever that time comes. But we're here to talk about this episode of SmackDown and what particularly happened. Now, like I said a little bit ago, this wasn't the best episode of SmackDown that we've seen in the past. But it wasn't a terrible episode of SmackDown. There were some things that I feel like might have saved it a little bit. Like the Roman Reigns angle with the whole Brock Lesnar tease that we got earlier in the show whenever he called Paul Heyman. A little bit of a date set for whenever we're going to see Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair have their rematch. We got a little bit more Happy Corbin, Kevin Owens angle. There's a lot of stuff that happened, but doesn't necessarily mean it was a great episode. Now, we'll take it piece by piece and kind of just get through this episode, and we'll start with some of the big stuff. Let's see here. We'll start with Roman Reigns. Might as well. It was the main event. So, like I said, Paul Heyman received a phone call that apparently was from Brock Lesnar. At first, he ignored the call because the ringtone was Brock Lesnar's theme song. Now, at first, whenever I heard that music, I thought that it might have been like that he was there and that you couldn't really hear it because it was quiet. Obviously, it wasn't like coming through the big speakers, but I thought maybe you just couldn't really hear it because they were backstage. Now, that thought only lasted a handful of seconds before I realized, oh, that's just his phone. It's ringing, and it's Brock Lesnar's ringtone. Now, that's kind of weird. If you have an iPhone, you know, you have to physically do that. Like, if you're going to set a ringtone, like, as a song, that's something that you have to manually do. Now, it could have happened, like, a long time ago. He could have literally had that exact same phone for, like, 3 years or whatever, and whenever he was still Brock Lesnar's advocate, he set his ringtone to his theme song, and he just never changed it. I doubt it, though. I mean, how long do you keep an iPhone these days? It's very rare that you're going to keep the same phone for that long. I mean, people don't keep their phones for more than a year nowadays, much less a handful of years. So I might have been looking too far into it, but I was kind of like, okay, why would his theme song, or why would his ringtone be Brock Lesnar's theme song? That just kind of threw me off right there, and maybe I was paying a little bit too much attention. But I brushed it off, and I was like, all right, you know, whatever. So he goes in there, and he informs Roman Reigns. He goes in Roman Reigns' locker room, and he tells him, hey, we have a problem, which Roman says, I don't have any problems. What are you talking about? I'm about to whoop Finn Balor's, you know what, and take care of business. And Paul says, no, we're not talking about Finn Balor. Brock Lesnar called me, and he said that he's going to be at SmackDown next week. And Roman begins to start, he kind of questions Paul Heyman, and he questions his knowledge, because Paul Heyman says that, Fox must be big in Saskatchewan. Like, that's how Paul Heyman, or that's how Brock Lesnar knew what Paul was doing. I guess I'm not really sure exactly why he made this Saskatchewan reference, but he does. And then Roman says, well, how do you know that he's in Saskatchewan? And then Paul Heyman says, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe he could be in Minnesota. And then Roman says, well, how do you know that he's in Minnesota? How do you know that he's not here tonight? Just to kind of tease you, let you know, ooh, there's a possibility that he might be there tonight. He ended up not showing up, but still they wanted to kind of have that floating around there because you really didn't know, given that there was a championship match for the Universal Championship tonight or last night on SmackDown. Just during the show, we knew that there was that main event lingering. And I kind of said in last week's episode that there was a possibility Brock Lesnar makes his appearance there. But he doesn't. So next week, Madison Square Garden, we should get Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns face-to-face, maybe even a little bit of a physical encounter. But nonetheless, we're going to get Brock Lesnar making his presence felt, literally, in Madison Square Garden. I wouldn't be surprised if he opened the show, but that's next week. We will get there whenever we get there. Continuing on here with things that happened on SmackDown, we'll talk about Becky Lynch, because she came out and she cut a little bit of a promo directed towards Bianca Belair, kind of clearing some things up. People are obviously questioning her for her tactics at SummerSlam and how she decided to go about things, and by beating Bianca Belair so quick. Becky's trying to say, look, I've been waiting for this moment for so long, and I was ready. So the fact that you weren't ready isn't my fault. You accepted the match. They needed a big name once Sasha Banks went down last minute. I stepped in. I beat you in 30 seconds. You weren't ready. I was. I'm sorry. I'm not going to apologize for that. So, I mean, she does have a point there. I still disagree with the decision in general, but I mean, Becky's not lying. Bianca Belair should have been ready. She was laced up. Like, she knew she was going to have a match at that moment, whether it was going to be, I mean, we knew it wasn't going to be Sasha, but Carmella, she was in the ring standing there, so she knew, all right, well, I might be wrestling her. The fact that Becky Lynch came out, it shouldn't have threw her off that much to where she just absolutely got squashed. It happened. It is what it is. We can't go back and change it. But basically, Becky Lynch starts to take shots at Bianca, in which Bianca comes out to retaliate. And she actually suggests that Becky Lynch does what Roman Reigns is going to do later on in the show, and that's defend his championship. The crowd wants to see it, but Becky Lynch says, hey, I'm not Roman Reigns, so yeah, I'm not going to defend my title against you tonight. And she leaves. Now, she runs into Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce backstage, and they clarify, look, Bianca deserves this rematch. Becky says, yeah, I know that, but it's going to be on my terms whenever I'm ready. And Adam Pearce says, all right, yeah, well, I'm going to let you know right now. The match is going to take place at Extreme Rules. Becky Lynch doesn't seem too excited about that, but that is the first championship match, I guess, announced for Extreme Rules. Unless I missed one, I definitely might have. But from what I can remember, this is the first official championship match announced for Extreme Rules. I don't want to just go out and say that I know Becky Lynch is going to win, but do you really think they're going to take the championship off of her? I mean, they already pulled the trigger on the heel turn. They already squashed what we had of, or what we built up with Bianca Belair. You can't go back and change that. Bianca regaining the championship, I don't feel like would do as much damage repair as you might think. Just because it's Becky Lynch, we all saw that. That wasn't just your ordinary someone loses their championship. I mean, that was embarrassing. It was absolute travesty, I guess. I mean, that might be a little bit dramatic, but it sucked. You know, just for a Bianca Belair fan and watching her rise to see it end like that, I mean, it still leaves a bad taste in my mouth, and I still don't really like the decision that was made, but it was made. So I don't think that you can give the championship back to her this soon. I really don't. Maybe just have her reestablish herself as being like a dominant contender. I mean, there's not a number one contender, but as a dominant contender. I mean, we'll see what happens with the whole rematch. Now that they know that they're going to get a match scheduled, it's not going to catch her off guard or anything like that, we might see a better performance from Bianca. I don't think it's going to equal a win, though. I really don't. I think that they brought Becky back for a reason. They put her in this position for a reason. And they're going to let her carry WWE through the fall into Royal Rumble season. And then we'll see what happens. But I think that Becky and Seth Rollins are both probably going to stay on SmackDown, and Becky's just going to be that champion, that women's champion for a while. They need to build up some stars, build up some baby faces maybe, if she's going to be the heel, which I don't agree with. I thought that Becky Lynch coming back could have been an excellent babyface. She left as a babyface. She could have came back as a babyface and then turned heel at some point, but they went ahead and pulled the trigger on it. So, I mean, you gotta let it play out. Let's talk about some of the action that happened here on SmackDown, some of the actual wrestling matches. We did get 5 wrestling matches in a 2-hour show. That's a lot, so that definitely may be why the show didn't feel as noteworthy, because there wasn't much story development. It was mostly a wrestling-filled show, which I don't really have a problem with. It's nice to get something like this every now and then. But the first match was a tag team match featuring the tag team champions, the Usos, versus the Street Profits, and what was titled a championship contenders match. So I guess if the Street Profits were to win this match, they would be the number one contender. I guess that they would ensure themselves as contenders and maybe solidify a championship match in the future, maybe at Extreme Rules. I think we all know that it's heading in that direction, but it's still weird that they call these things championship contenders matches. But this was one of the few matches that had a weird ending to it. There are some other matches later in the show that I felt like also had kind of, whether they were just weird endings or sloppy finishes, they just ended weird. And this was one of them where they stopped the match because they called the disqualification because the referee basically lost control of the match. Jey Uso wasn't the legal man, and he started beating the absolute hell out of Montez Ford, was throwing him into the ring post and things like that. The referee rings the bell, calls a disqualification, and they kind of start to brawl on the outside of the ring. Eventually, the Street Profits end up standing tall, and they get the last laugh here on this show. So I do expect next week, Madison Square Garden, we are going to get some type of development here with the tag team championship picture, and I think it's pretty clear that the Street Profits are going to be next in line. Moving on, we have Rick Boogs defeating Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler tried to get the attention of Tony Storm backstage. We haven't seen Tony Storm here in a few weeks on SmackDown. And I really didn't, as crappy as it is to say, I really didn't notice. I honestly didn't. It took me seeing her backstage that I said, wait a minute, Tony Storm is on SmackDown. Why the hell hasn't she been, you know, showing up to the shows? Apparently they just have her backstage. So that's not a good thing. But at least she got a little bit of airtime tonight. And she basically just rejected Dolph Ziggler. He offered for her to go watch it ringside and be in his corner. And she said, I'm actually rooting for Rick Boogs tonight. And speaking of Rick Boogs, he actually got the win one-on-one against another technical wrestler and Dolph Ziggler. It's pretty obvious that Boogs has a technical wrestling background. You could just tell by the way he is in the ring, his body language, his movements, some of the things that he does. It's pretty obvious. And him and Dolph Ziggler had a pretty technical match, I guess you can say. Dolph Ziggler went for a super kick towards the end. It was countered. Rick Boogs turns it into a pump handle slam and gets the win. That's his third time to use that move to win a match, and he is 3-0. So I know that his first two wins were tag team matches with Shinsuke Nakamura as his partner, but this time he won a one-on-one singles match. So that alone is pretty exciting, I guess you can say. I mean, it shows that they're pushing him at least a little bit. You know, they're not just letting him be this mouthpiece, this sideshow for King Nakamura and his Intercontinental Championship run. They're actually getting Rick Boogs in the ring and letting him basically form a little character of himself, a nice in-ring resume to start off. 3-0. You can't really fault the guy for that. He's had three opportunities in the ring, and he's won all three of them, and including a one-on-one match. So I'm looking forward to this continuing with Rick Boogs, and hopefully he continues to pull out wins. But either way, I am definitely a fan of his. I know that him and Shinsuke Nakamura making their appearance is a little bit less juicy without Pat McAfee on commentary. He actually adds to their entrance whenever he just is absolutely losing his mind on the table and ends up standing on the table. So definitely miss Pat. They did announce that he's going to be back next week, so I'm looking forward to that. It's awesome seeing the WWE Universe and people who I know weren't really sure about Pat when he first started, because, I mean, like I said, when he made his debut, whenever it was first announced that he was going to be the long-term or at least a permanent member of the SmackDown commentary team, I was excited. I mean, you guys know I've been a Pat McAfee fan for years, literally, before I ever knew that it was even a possibility that he was going to make an appearance on WWE, let alone actually have a permanent role here. Even whenever he was making appearances on NXT, I thought that was pretty badass. I mean, that was his first taste of wrestling, really, other than like covering kickoff shows and things like that. But NXT was how he got his foot in the door. And now being a part of SmackDown, the show that I cover, it's just badass. And it's nice to see people who I know are like diehard wrestling fans come around with Pat and realize that, hey, this is who he is. He's not just putting on some show to try to be electric or, you know, raise the enthusiasm or things like that. He's literally this person 24/7. So I enjoy his presence on SmackDown. I hope everybody else does as well. And I hope that he sticks around. So glad to hear that he's getting well from his battle with COVID. listening to a show. He's definitely feeling better. So I'm glad to see that the Pat's going to be in Madison Square Garden next week for the Super SmackDown. I know Pat being there is going to make it a lot more of a big show. So you might want to call it Extra Super SmackDown or something like that. But anyways, let's continue on here in the show. We talked about Rick Boogs. We talked about Becky Lynch coming back. So let's talk about Cesaro and his little feud with Seth Rollins. Or at least we thought this feud was over. And it is. This feud really wasn't about Cesaro, although he was involved. This was about Edge and Seth Rollins. So Seth Rollins and Cesaro have a one-on-one match that is a good match. I mean, these two fought at WrestleMania, for Christ's sake. So you know that these two know how to go, and they could put on a damn good match. Tonight was no different. This was another one that had a weird finish. It wasn't a clean finish by anything. It was another disqualification. So Rick Boogs is really the only one that had a straight-up clean, no BS win over Dolph Ziggler. But this match definitely didn't end like that. How it actually ended after about, I'd say, an 8-minute match. I don't want to sell it short, but it didn't seem like it was that long. Seth Rollins goes to the outside of the ring, and he's kind of standing over there by, not where the commentary table is, but where the people are who like ring the bell and stuff like that, where if someone's in the ring and they're asking for a microphone, that's who brings the microphone, is that little area over there. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't know what it's called at the moment, so forgive me. But Seth Rollins is standing right there, and Cesaro was running towards him. He leaves the ring, and he runs around. He gets a pretty good running start, and he's going to try to uppercut him through the barricade. Right before he does that, Seth Rollins throws a steel chair at him, so he actually ends up uppercutting the chair. That causes a disqualification. The match ends, and Seth Rollins begins to, according to Michael Cole, I actually like this line, he said that he was doing a Best of Edge cover band, pretty much. Like he was doing all of Edge's stuff. He did the Edge-O-Matic during the match. He was trying to do the concerto. He pulled the bar off of the chair, just doing things that Edge has done in the past, especially here recently, and he was about to absolutely beat the hell out of Cesaro. And Edge comes out for the save, stands over Cesaro just to basically defend him. And Seth Rollins runs away. He runs through the crowd. And then we get a little bit of a promo saying next week at Madison Square Garden, we're going to get Edge versus Rollins 2. And Edge says, hey, this does not end well. I already told you that. So this could be a match to keep an eye on next week. Edge won their match at SummerSlam. They could somehow give Seth Rollins the win here and let this be kind of the step for a rubber match at Extreme Rules. Because that's what I thought. Whenever Edge was kind of hyping it up, I'm challenging you to a match at Extreme Rules in like a, I don't know. I mean, I hate to just do the cliche Extreme Rules match, maybe like a TLC match or just like a tables match, something with a little bit of spice to it, you know, something that makes the match gimmicky almost, since they're going to be at a gimmick pay-per-view. You might as well play into that. So that's what I thought it was going to be. He ends up challenging him to a match next week on SmackDown, where you can definitely expect this to be some type of hook or crook finish. I don't expect this to be a clean match with an outright winner. If I were to guess, I would expect Seth Rollins to get the win. I do think that they're going to let the part-time past legend beat the up and coming guy who is a blue chip star in this company. So I feel like they have to give a win to Rollins here for the sake of the rivalry, for the sake of the program. You don't want it to be just a Edge goes over Rollins 2-0, and there's really no reason for them to have a third match. You have to have Rollins win here, I feel like, so I think that's what's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be a clean win, but he's going to do something sneaky, and Seth Rollins is going to walk out of Madison Square Garden with the win. So, I mean, I'm calling it now. I could be wrong. If I am wrong, definitely let me know about it and tell me how much of a stooge I am. So let's see. Continuing on here. Ooh, I like this. Happy Corbin and Logan Paul were guests on Kevin Owens' KO show. Now, whenever this happened, I thought that they were both probably going to get a stunner and the crowd was going to be happy and Kevin Owens was going to walk away. But I should have known better than to think that they would automatically make Happy Corbin be the butt of a joke or end up being the one who ends up on his back this quick after making his character shift. I don't want to say it's like a complete character change because he's still basically the same guy, just a different version of himself. Because they're still playing into him being poor. They're still referencing it. So now it's just like it was a shift. Now he's rich now, I guess. Because he pulls up in a Rolls Royce. I mean, it doesn't get much more rich than that. I will say, though, about this Kevin Owens show. The crowd, no matter where they are, they absolutely hate Logan Paul. And it's funny. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know what he did to the wrestling community to make them hate him so much. Because, I mean, from everything I've seen about, like, Logan Paul speaking about wrestling, you know, in interviews and things like that, where he's publicly speaking about WWE, he has nothing but good things to say about the product. He talks about wrestling being much more, quote-unquote, real than, you know, the perception is outside. People who don't watch wrestling, people who have no idea about the business, they just think, oh, it's that fake stuff. Logan Paul says, no, you have no idea what you're talking about. That stuff is real. And we all know what he's talking about. He's talking about the bumps, you know, and that's something that Matt mentioned in his Raw review. He says taking, like, how he's taken bumps before and how much they hurt. I've given one of my buddies a shout out here, Tino_Valentino_17 at Instagram. He is a professional wrestler, except he's in the independent scene. So he travels all around the state of Texas and Kansas and things like that. But I went to train with him for one day. Literally just one day I went because I wanted to run the ropes. I mean, if you're a wrestling fan, I feel like at some point you have to hop in the ring. But I will say, prepare to have your perception and your perspective of wrestling change forever because that's what it is. I mean, literally the guy who was there training my buddy Tino and also kind of training me that day, the first thing he said whenever I took my first bump was, that ain't no pillow, is it? Because basically, I mean, that's what your reference or that's what your history of quote-unquote wrestling is. You know, you're wrestling on your bed, on a trampoline, where you can do a swanton bomb on somebody and not feel a thing. That is not the case when you're in a wrestling ring. I mean, some are better than others, and that's one thing that Tino even said, because I took a lot of bumps that day, and I was sore for like 3 days, couldn't walk. I had a rope rash on my ribs and on my back, where my back was just red from running the ropes. You definitely want to, because I was wearing a cutoff shirt. If I can go back in time, I would wear two shirts, not just one shirt. I would make sure that my skin was protected because that absolutely sucked. But, I mean, the reason why I say your perception is going to be changed is because you're going to realize, like, hey, this isn't a game. Like, this isn't just these guys out here night after night throwing themselves from 10 feet, landing flat on their back. And kind of like I was saying, every ring is different. Like, the ring I was training in, the ring that I was kind of bouncing around in, was not a very good one. And that's like, admittedly, the people that were there was like, hey, this is not the best ring. You go to a WWE ring or a ring that's actually, you know, put together well, I feel like the bumps might not hurt as much. And there are spots in the ring that are different. Like, you bounce around in one corner, it might not be as bouncy in the other corner. You kind of got to fill the ring out and know, like, the surface that you're wrestling on. But, I mean, that's all from one day, literally one day of training. And I learned quite a bit of stuff. So the people that have actually done this stuff for years and do this literally for a living, have nothing but respect for them, more power to them. And basically, they're the ones who, like, whenever they talk about wrestling and they're speaking about, like, the small minor details of it and speaking from experience, like, whenever they tell you, like, you know, you really don't know what you're talking about, like, I listen to them because I know, like, hey, I do not know what I'm talking about when it comes to this stuff. So I always point that stuff in that direction. But the whole reason why I started talking about taking bumps, obviously, because I remember Matt talking about it on the Raw review, and I kind of wanted to give my thoughts because I've actually stepped in a ring too before. And like I said, if you haven't, you definitely want to. But the whole reason why I got off topic there was because of Logan Paul and how he has spoken nothing but good things about the product, but for whatever reason, the crowd still absolutely hates him. And they were booing him out of the building. Kevin Owens was there just not giving in to all the stuff. He was kind of being disrespectful towards them and Happy Corbin as well. I mean, it was kind of going both ways. It was a mutual disrespect. If you don't remember, Logan Paul received a stunner at WrestleMania from Kevin Owens. So they do have a little bit of bad blood. They started to push a little bit. They pushed each other, and Kevin Owens was running at him to likely punch him or at least swing at him. Happy Corbin cheap shots him, jumps in the way, and starts to beat the hell out of Kevin Owens after he hits him with a choke slam. Well, Logan Paul goes over there because he offered him a $100 bill. He said, because whenever Kevin Owens was being disrespectful, Logan Paul said, hey, you know, you shouldn't be talking like that to somebody who's about to give you $100. And he tries to lean over and hand it to him, saying, like, hey, look at the way you're dressed. You could use this a lot more than I could. Kevin Owens ends up smacking the $100 bill out of his hand. And that's whenever all the pushing and shoving happens. But after he receives the choke slam and he's laying there, and Happy Corbin and Logan Paul are about to leave, Logan Paul sets the $100 bill on his chest and hits him with the viral, you're not that guy, pal. Trust me, you're not that guy. Now, I know some of you might not know what that is, but if you've seen that video on the internet, it's pretty hilarious of like a guy in a, it looked like maybe like a Walgreens. He was in a store somewhere in line, and another person that was in the line standing with him, they were kind of, you know, talking crap back and forth to each other. So if you haven't seen that video, definitely go check it out just so you can know what I'm talking about. And you might get a laugh out of it too. I mean, it's not the funniest video out there, but that's what Logan Paul and Happy Corbin were referencing. So it's just a funny thing. So if you even care, definitely go check that out. You could definitely find it somewhere. But let's see here. Not that many things left that happened on the show. Sami Zayn defeated Dominic Mysterio with a Huluva kick. Sami Zayn tried to leave. Before the match was over, Rey Mysterio comes out from backstage, says, no, you're not leaving. He makes him go back in the ring. Dominic Mysterio jumps over the ropes kind of to knock him down and then throws Sami Zayn in the ring. And him and his dad have like literally like a 1 to 2 second exchange where he says, yeah, I got this. Don't worry. Like, you're good. Go back. Dominic climbs back in the ring and then receives a Huluva kick, loses the match. So I know they're going to try to blame that little half second delay on Rey Mysterio as like to why he lost the match, which is absolutely stupid. This was probably the worst ending of the match, or I mean of the night, sorry. And it's because of, not just because of that stuff, but I'm not like, Dominic did good in the match. I don't want to discredit his performance inside of the ring because he did a damn good job tonight. I was impressed. But the ending, if you go back and watch him sell this Huluva kick, it was absolutely terrible. And you might be able to blame the camera angles because they kind of changed at the very last second. And you see Dominic, but he turns his head to sell the kick about a half second before Sami Zayn even gets there. And it's very noticeable. It's one of those things that, I mean, if you only do this every now and then, it's not that big of a deal. But there's almost like one of these moments every single time Dominic wrestles. And like I said, I don't want to discredit everything that he does because it is extremely hard. I just went on a little bit of a rant talking about how hard it is to actually get in the ring and wrestle. So I'm not trying to say like, ooh, I could do a lot better or Dominic needs to do this and that, trying to critique him. But I'm just saying that people notice this stuff. And if you have that many mess ups and if you continue to do things like this, eventually Vince McMahon is going to stop giving you opportunities regardless of who your dad is. So hopefully Dominic can get this polished up. Because like I said, I mean, it's not like he's a terrible wrestler or anything like that. I actually do enjoy watching him, but it's just every now and then he'll do something that you're like, come on, man. And that was one of them because it was definitely a sloppy finish, to say the least. And I can only imagine what it looked like for the people sitting there on ringside who saw it actually happen. But either way, you could expect Dominic and Rey Mysterio's divide to continue to happen, and they'll probably end up getting sped up a little bit as we get closer to Extreme Rules and Crown Jewel. I do expect them to have a one-on-one match though at some point. I just hope that they squeeze all the juice out of that, pull back from 2005, do everything that you need to do to make this program actually feel important. But I will say, I already talked about Roman Reigns, but I don't think, if I'm not mistaken, that I talked about the actual match. I think I kind of just talked about the Paul Heyman stuff, so I will talk about the actual main event match between him and Finn Balor and actually what happened. And it was supposed to be a clean one-on-one match, you know, just no Usos, no Paul Heyman, no nothing, just Roman Reigns versus Finn Balor. It wasn't announced that it was going to be that, but that's kind of what you expected, or at least that's what I expected, I guess. I thought that Roman Reigns was going to show his confidence and things like that and say, you know, I don't need anybody. I can beat a guy like Finn Balor, especially if you're trying to prepare a guy for Brock Lesnar. You better be able to beat Finn Balor one-on-one without any help. But we don't really get to see that because the Usos attack Finn Balor before the match even begins. And they are beating the hell out of him. Roman Reigns eventually comes out. They ask Finn if he wants to continue, and he says yes. So they have the match. And Roman Reigns is, you know, having his way with him for a while there. Though at the end, Finn Balor took control of the match. He really did. And he had a couple of spots that were actually very near falls. And you thought that, hey, he might actually win. Now, I wasn't actually convinced that he was going to take the championship from Roman Reigns, but that's what the match was doing. Like, it was making you believe Finn Balor has a chance here because, I mean, he started to really take control. And one of the kickouts that Roman Reigns had towards the end was actually a low blow. The referee couldn't see it because he was on the opposite side, but it was actually the nearest fall. Whenever he went to 2 3/4, Roman Reigns kicked out and he hit Finn Balor with a low blow. And Roman Reigns does eventually get him in just a regular chokehold, not a guillotine or anything like that, just an ordinary chokehold, and makes Finn Balor fall asleep. He chokes him out, and that's how the match ends. He doesn't tap out. He doesn't get pinned. So Finn Balor basically just gets put to sleep. He doesn't give up or anything like that. So, I mean, it doesn't hurt him, although, I mean, he was choked out, so he still lost a championship match. But when you look at it as the fact that he didn't tap out, he didn't get pinned, and he was attacked before the match, so it wasn't fair in any regard, and he still almost won. Finn Balor definitely has a leg to stand on with this, with getting a rematch. I think that maybe Adam Pearce might be on his side too here in the coming weeks whenever it comes to like discussing this, maybe approaching Roman Reigns saying, hey, Finn Balor deserves a rematch. It turns out that you low blowed him. I don't think that they'll play into that, but I know that the camera angle showed it, so it's not like they're trying to hide it as if it was some mistake. They might play into it, and they definitely can. But one other thing here, when Roman Reigns was leaving, the lights turned red, and there was like a, if you listen closely, you're not going to hear it on the first try, but if you listen closely, you'll hear the heartbeat, like a doo-doo, almost like the demon, you know, the Finn Balor demon. But the thing that confused me is when this happened, Michael Cole was literally saying, and Brock Lesnar is lurking, and the lights turned red, and the demon came down. So I thought, I mean, Brock Lesnar's entrance, the whole light thing is red. I thought they might have been teasing that, like, oh, this is like they're trying to hint Brock Lesnar is literally lurking and Roman Reigns is, it's almost like whenever Kane screwed The Undertaker out of his Buried Alive match with Vince McMahon and The Undertaker went away and eventually came back. Well, as he was leading up to whenever he came back at WrestleMania 20, week after week on Raw, every time Kane was in a match, something would happen like with the lights or on the Jumbotron that would like tease that The Undertaker was coming back. And it was almost like Kane was being haunted. I thought they might've been doing something like that with Brock Lesnar. Like, ooh, they're just going to do these little things in production to try to scare Roman Reigns or to make it seem like Brock Lesnar is lurking or something like that. But my gut tells me that it was the demon that they're trying to hint at the, whenever Finn Balor does get a rematch, it's not going to be Finn Balor. It's going to be the demon versus Roman Reigns. And I'm actually pretty sure that that's what it is. Just my gut tells me that. And then if you watch the actual clip on Twitter of the light happening, it's like a GIF. So it plays over and over again, and it's only like 3 seconds. So you can see all the small details, like how Roman Reigns reacts to it, Paul Heyman. But if you look closely in the ring, whenever the lights go out, like Finn Balor's kind of laying there while the lights are still on, just like kind of grimacing. And as soon as the lights turn red and go out, you see him quickly like lay down, like he's like flat. And I don't know if that had anything to do with the lights or anything like that, but it kind of just told me like maybe he expected the camera to be shining on him or just to be pointed at him. I don't really know exactly what they were doing there, but I noticed it was a small thing. As soon as the lights turned out and went red, Finn Balor like kind of quickly laid flat on his back. So I don't know. The more I watched it, the more things I started to notice, but that is the SmackDown review. I hope that you enjoyed it. I do feel like maybe my fastball wasn't there this morning. I do apologize. I'm trying to get ready for all the college football and all that stuff that's going to happen today. So I do apologize. But like I said, not that great of an episode of SmackDown. It wasn't terrible. I do know next week will be better. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. They're going to try to do everything they can to get ratings, to get people to tune in. So whenever the show actually happens, I do expect them to bring their A-game. I mean, Brock Lesnar is going to be there. That alone is going to have people tune in. So let's hope that we get a good show, more storyline development. And hopefully the crowd in New York City actually, you know, lets them hear it. I'm excited for this. And hopefully maybe somebody involved in the WWE podcast can go. Because if you think about it, there's been really two big events here since, three, I guess, if you count... what's it called? Allegiant Stadium, SummerSlam. So the first ever event with fans, Houston, Texas. I was there. I was the on-site correspondent. CM Punk's return, Rampage a couple weeks ago, Ashley Mann was there. So we had another WWE podcast representative. And then Allegiant Stadium, SummerSlam, what was his name for the mailbag? And I do apologize for not remembering your name. He left a voicemail and he was talking about how Allegiant Stadium, all the problems, how he had to walk like 500 yards and the how he couldn't get a beer or anything like that. I really wish I could remember your nickname because I know it was a good one. So I do apologize there. If somebody remembers, definitely get at me and let me know. But we basically had a WWE podcast member there at SummerSlam as well because we got to hear all about it. I felt like I was there hearing his voicemail. So definitely a shout out to the listener and whoever left that voicemail. Definitely wish I could remember your name. But that is, like I said, the SmackDown review. I definitely hope you guys will tune in next week and check it out, as well as tune in to all the other shows that we have here on the WWE podcast, because they are coming. There is no shortage of shows. No shows are stopping. We're only getting more shows, it seems like. So the content is only going to continue to come in large doses. So with all that being said, I hope you guys all have a great Labor Day weekend. Hope you enjoy having a little extra time off if you do. I know not all jobs work like that. I luckily do get Monday off, so I'm going to enjoy these next 3 days and not look forward to going back to work on Tuesday. Let's just say that. But either way, hope you guys all have a fantastic long weekend. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.